VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is a podcast from The Times. Go to thetimes.co.uk.
Welcome to The Game, the podcast whose task it is to document the most crazy of seasons, which would be this one. Joining me in a typically crazy week, I have the insane Patrick Barkley, the lunatic Tony Evans, and the certifiably committable Peter Lansley. Later on, we'll discuss the advantages of a powerful players' union, and maybe the disadvantages, too. But let's start with another goal fest. All right, Stamford Bridge, Chelsea, Arsenal, Saturday kickoff, 8 goals, probably could have been more. I was there, I have to say, you know, rarely did 90 minutes go as quickly, which is a good thing. But, Patty, was this a great game of two teams that attack very, very well? Or was it two teams that defended badly? Or are you going to take the easy way out and say it's a little bit of both?
Of course it's a bit of both. I thought it was, I'm never going to complain about horrid defending. At least not much. I thought it was a lovely open game, one of these games that sort of took on a life. And what I loved about it is, yet again, the cliche about Arsenal being mentally weak was exposed. You know, what more do you want than to be twice to go 2 goals down, to go ahead and then be pegged back? They couldn't have had more tests of their mental resolve than all of that in a derby match at Stamford Bridge, and they came through it and won.
Tony, you're a bit more of a purist. Was your bottle half full or half empty?
Well, you know, it's like we were saying last week on the live podcast. I mean, frankly, defending's a lost art, and some of that was embarrassing. If these are supposed to be two of the best teams in the country, then it's a joke, isn't it? And it is exciting, and it's all over the place. But you know what? We used to be able to watch football where people did the job they were supposed to do, where people could play in the roles that they're in. And now we're seeing this sort of thing, and entertaining, fun. But you know what? It's the ghost of football on Halloween.
See, I knew the Grinch Tony Evans was going to show up. Although I have to say, I'm probably quite close to your position on this one, Tony. Peter, what do you say?
I just thought it was wonderful fun. I think if you were emotionally involved in, you know, trying to sort out one of those defences, then you'd definitely be on Tony's side of the fence there. But just from a sort of neutral perspective, the absolute wonderful nature of the attacking and how much defences were, how much attacks were on top of the defences, it's like something my dad used to tell me about. I mean, there might as well sort of been 2-3-5 the way it was going. And yeah, this is the age of the attacking fullback, isn't it? We've got Bossing, meant to be one of the best attacking fullbacks, got Ashley Cole the other side.
Sorry, yet, Peter, if I jump in there.
Horribly exposed. I think it was wonderful.
Peter, sorry if I jump in there. Who said, I know we were talking about sort of crazy weeks and lunatics and stuff like that. Who said Bissing was one of the best attacking fullbacks?
I'm sure I read it somewhere a few years ago.
I thought Bissing was absolutely, I mean, I was right, they were absolutely, there were some great individual performances. Uh-huh. I mean, obviously, we're going to talk about Van Persie and Aaron Ramsey, who I think is, I mean, I love this guy more and more every time I see him. Mata, I thought, great goal. Yes. Lampard, the first half hour. But there were some terrible performances, and one of those was Bosingwa, who I think was awful
the whole game. Bosingwa is a very good example of what you might call Poborski syndrome or Jordi Cruyff syndrome. Never buy a player on the basis of a major tournament. If you'd watched the European Championship in 2008, you'd have said, this guy has the lot. He's disciplined, he's like a whippet physically, tremendous speed and agility, great timing the way he comes onto the ball, defends okay. You know, you'd have snapped him up, you'd have paid, what was it Chelsea paid for him, 17 million? But he's been a terrible signing. He's been up there with Giuliano Belletti as a right back, except that Belletti, the great thing about Belletti, he was a good enough footballer to move into other positions and give Chelsea good service.
Also, Belletti cost, like, what, 2 million? And this guy cost 8 times as much. And also, Bosingwa was bought by Luis Scolari, who you would think would know him.
Yes. Now, was his manager. So, I mean, he's proved a terrible signing, but I must admit, I didn't see it. I thought that I went along with all the people who said, you know, with Bosingwa on one side, Ashley Cole on the other, this could be Cafu and Roberto Carlos sort of imitated in our league. It could be a wonderful Brazilian shape, Chelsea, and of course, got it completely wrong.
To be fair to Bosingwa, he has had like 2 major knee injuries as well, and has probably lost a step. Tony,
You know the bins that they used to dribble around in training?
Yeah.
Well, they make the first team now, and they're getting paid 70 grand a week for it. No, I mean, in all seriousness, I'm sitting there, everyone's saying, oh, what a festival of football, what pleasure, what joy. I'm sitting there, it irritates me, it's going to give me a heart attack. I just can't believe how bad these are at the back. And these are 2 of the top 4 teams. And this week, they're going to be carrying the flag in Europe. Well, I'll tell you what, Arsenal are going to get through to the knockout stages, so are Chelsea. But if they defend like that, they're not going to go very far.
Well, and Tony, those are the 2 English teams, of course, who are doing well in Europe, unlike the other 2. But Tony, I wanted to ask you, though, because I picked up the papers on Sunday. I saw some of what was written today. And, you know, a lot of the talk is about, Andre Villas-Boas' system and so on, and the high press, and these comparisons, how he's given up 15 goals this year, whereas Mourinho, gave up 15 in the entire 2004-05 season. My personal take is that what we saw against Arsenal wasn't necessarily the failure of a system. And it's not Villas-Boas' system that was, obviously you're going to risk more with that system, but it was a bunch of individual errors. John Terry, obviously, Bosingwa getting cut out, Peter Cech, failing to make 2 or 3 saves that you would expect Peter Cech to make. Am I wrong on this? Is this a bunch of individuals all playing badly on the same day and Arsenal attacking very well and Chelsea paying a price? Or is there something wrong with Villas-Boas' system, in your opinion?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. I didn't see much of a system there. But I also think it's a defence that's got old very quickly. Well, it's got old and not good enough. I mean, Terry is starting to show creaks, isn't he? I mean, last year he kept getting caught under the ball. You know, his great knack was to be able to get to the point where he could attack it and head it, but all of a sudden it's going over his head. He's losing a step. I think he's reaching the end. I mean, I think he's still got this season to go, and I don't think I'd say drop him immediately, but you'd think twice about playing him. I don't think that the rest of that defence are good enough, with the exception of course of Ashley Cole. But he's raving forward all the time, and the other 3 really, really struggled.
The other thing with this, Tony, is if you're going to play what Villas-Boas would call a system, and you're allowing both fullbacks to bomb on, they're almost wing backs, aren't they? That means the holding midfielder and the central defenders have got to have some pace. You've got to have at least 1 with very decent pace, and there's no pace in Ivanovic and Terry and Mikel.
I thought Ramirez and Mikel was a good idea.
I thought Ramirez and Mikel did fine, actually. And also, I think you guys, I know Ivanovic looks funny because he's got sort of the little tiny alligator arms and he's got the weird build, but I think he's actually a lot quicker than people give him credit for.
He's decent, but he's not as good as Alex. And Alex sort of papered over the cracks left by the departure of Carvalho for a bit. But Terry needs a good centre-half next to him. Either that, or he needs a reincarnated Claude Makélélé in front of him. And Mikel certainly isn't that. I mean, I hope from Chelsea's point of view that Romeo, the very, very good-looking...
handsome, isn't he?
I mean, he looks
bit
like
of a dish.
He looks like... I think he's gorgeous. But he looks like a very, very good holding midfield player prospect. And I think the sooner he gets in the... Mikel, as I say, 4 years, 3 years ago, I'd have been on the phone to Old Trafford and saying, do you still want Mikel? Because you can have him.
This is a kinder, gentler podcast, so we're only going to pick on referees twice today, or even question them. One comes up later in Quick Hits for the joy of all Blackburn fans. The other one, though, is, hey, Tony, a provocative question coming here from me, right? Mm. So Arsenal win 5-3, and Chelsea are pants, and blah, 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 and Arsenal, great, wonderful game. If Szczesny gets sent off for taking out Ashley Cole, and Szczesny himself tweeted afterwards, wow, I was shocked that he let me stay on the pitch.
Yeah.
To me, that seemed like an obvious, obvious red card. And before somebody brings up the covering defender and last man, whatever, A, it's a goal-scoring opportunity, and B, obviously there's a difference. When the last man is a goalkeeper, he can actually save it with his hands. When the last man is Koscielny standing there inside a big, wide-open, gaping goal, then it's a lot easier for somebody to put the ball past him, even a so-so finisher like Ashley Cole. Could that decision have gone a different way, and then we'd be saying a whole bunch of different things?
Well, I think we probably would. I mean, I don't think we can judge either team on this performance. You know, what we can do is judge the both of them and say, must do better. You know, it's. I think that the start of the season, both sides have shown weaknesses that haven't been addressed. And I think Wenger's got loads of things still to sort out. But I think this Chelsea team is a work in progress. And I mean, even up front, again, Torres looked ill-fitting, to say the least, on Saturday. I thought Mata looked well. It looked good, of course. And Lampard's in that awkward position where he's running into the same spaces as Torres all the time. I think there's a lot for Villas-Boas to sort out. And I think it'll take a while. And I don't think they're going to do as well as perhaps people might have anticipated looking at the first few games.
Let's talk some Arsenal now. Peter, I highlighted Ramsey and Van Persie. I thought Walcott was really poor. I think a chicken head cut off, so on. They loved him on Match of the Day. He did score what I thought was a very sort of bizarre goal where he goes to ground, everybody stops, and then it's like he's the only one who gets up and runs past everybody and then belts it home. Am I being harsh? What did you make?
Walcott's a great player to watch on Match of the Day highlights, isn't he? Because you can pick out the best and the worst of him. His consistency is obviously still not quite there. The things he does brilliantly when he does them at such pace are fantastic, but he can't half look clumsy. As for that goal, I was rewinding it and trying to see who actually tripped him up, and it's just one of the ghosts popping about of the soil, isn't it? But he managed to beat four players with him, putting a cracking shot. So can we afford to keep taking him as this, you know, great young hope, or is it time that he should be producing more consistently? It's probably the latter, isn't it?
Paddy, as you know, I'm a per-Mertesacker guy, and I think I'm looking kind of silly right now because he has been showing up. I thought he was at fault for the Lampard goal and the Terry goal yesterday. That said, we should give credit to a guy who got a lot of stick last season. I think it was very good. That's Lauren Koscielny, and I'm just wondering, for Malin fit again, Sanya is going to come back from injury at some point. This is not, and even Andre Santos, who struggled a lot in the first half, but I thought looked better in the second half until Lukaku flattened him.
Yep.
Can this defense come together especially with an Alex Song who's improving and an Arteta who holds his position very well?
Given fitness, I think that Arsenal have got the basis. Like you, I'm fascinated by Koscielny. You see mistakes, you think back to the turning point of last season, the Carling Cup final, and so on. And yet, there are times when he looks a thoroughbred. He's got very good technique. You can tell why Wenger bought him. And I think, given the right-left balance, you know, with Vermaelen, I think Arsenal might be on the verge of finding a serviceable back four, back five, actually, when the keeper matures. So, yeah, I agree. I think they might be getting somewhere. I think They have turned the corner, Arsenal. I'm convinced of that now. They've got a winnable match on Tuesday night. And I think things are going... I mean, what is it now? 8 wins out of 9.
Eight wins out of nine.
Not bad for a mentally weak team, you know. Not a bad response to an 8-2 defeat. So, I think I agree with you. I think things are hardening up. I think Mertesacker will be a good influence around the place. You know, having a German, a proper German, you know, like him, a guy who's been around a long, long time, consistent player. He's got good things, he's got bad things. I think he's very... He brings the ball out. This is what I like about him, you know. And he's got a good head on his shoulders. I think he'll be fine. He's bound to make mistakes in his first season. But no, things are going the right way for Arsenal now.
One final thing, and this might be a little bit sketchy because this was widely reported in the media in other countries.
Yeah.
In this country, it wasn't, which makes me think that it was probably because Arsenal's press office did some very quick damage control afterwards. But I'm just going to mention this because I think it does highlight some of the scrutiny players are under, and some of the sort of the immediacy of Twitter and social media. And that's Robin van Persie's goal celebration, where it looks like he's planned something elaborate, where he's dusting off his shoulders and then moving his arms, and maybe it's the elation, but there is a moment where it does clearly appear that he's making a certain gesture with his arm forward. Now, I'm not a mind reader. It may be possible that, you know, in his spare time, he amuses himself by dressing up as a Waffen-SS. I don't think so, because given the background where he grew up, given who his dad is, given who his missus is, his missus is Dutch of Moroccan descent, I might add, given everything we know about this person. But, Tony, are you surprised? I mean, is this scrutiny good? Should we all just grow up a little? Should we have the scrutiny? And then actually, do we actually show a lot of maturity by saying, look, it's funny. It looked like that, but it's clearly not that. Let's move on and not talk about this anymore.
It's the most ridiculous thing I've heard since the Brighton fans were accused of doing Sieg Heils at Millwall, when in fact they were chanting seagulls. I mean, the level of scrutiny is just absurd. I mean, I saw it at the time, and I didn't think anything of it, but you know, especially in this mad climate where everyone wants to, where racism is top of the agenda as well, everyone's going to be looking for every little thing, and it's one of them. Grow up. It clearly wasn't a Nazi salute. You know, I mean, it's just bizarre.
The one thing, though, perhaps Robin van Persie might want to learn from, since he does score a lot of goals, he will presumably will be celebrating again very, very soon. He may want to work on them at home in front of the mirror or something, so they look a little bit more natural and, a little more seamless. Moving on to the Hawthorns, where West Brom played Liverpool. Now, Roy Hodgson against his old team again. This is sort of the subtext. Some nasty Hodgson lovers out there, and I'm not looking at anybody right now. We're drawing sort of match-by-match comparisons between Hodgson and Kenny and stuff like that. In the end, Peter, you were there. It looked to me like, from what I saw on television, as a professional performance from Liverpool, one where maybe they actually created fewer chances than they did in previous games where they didn't get the win, but in the end, it looked very mature.
It was very proficient. You're right. It was. We'll debate the penalty perhaps in a little bit. I'm still debating it slightly, although I have backtracked from my initial stance that Suarez made too much of it. But once they got in front, Liverpool looked so assured. Their keeping of the ball, and this is against a side, West Brom, who have done very well in possession in recent years. Liverpool just picked them off. They made Odemwingie disappear. They kept the ball. They went wide when necessary. Suarez was dropping off. Carroll was stretching the play high. It's very promising. I mean, I can't see them competing for the title, obviously, I'd say this year, but you can certainly see them pushing for a Champions League qualification on that basis.
Tony, did it feel weird to see a Liverpool performance like this? No Gerrard, no Carragher, and sort of one of those sort of maximum result, minimum effort, seemingly type performances?
No, I mean, they play quite well all year. I mean, aside from the horror show at White Hart Lane, they've only really had one bad half, and that was the second half against against Sunderland, the first game of the season. They've played well, and they've not put away chances. And they didn't put away the chances particularly well on Saturday either. But, you know, I mean, if they do start converting, I think then people will be raving them as being one of the form teams, because they pass the ball nicely, they move the ball, they create space, and you know, Suarez is just absolutely brilliant. You know, it was good to see Andy Carroll looking a bit more like a player who can compete at this level, never mind the transfer fee tag on him. I thought, like, all in all, it was a reasonable performance against an extremely poor West Brom team. Couldn't believe how bad they were.
I accept that, but I don't think there are any excuses. I think that I agree with everything Tony said, but in fact, I'll probably even go further. There was definite penalty, no question about it. I wish more of those were given. It's not it's a contact sport, but the ball's got to be involved at some stage. And after that, West Brom completely.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Disintegrated. They realised they were out of their depth, and they responded very, I thought, poorly. Liverpool, I agree with Tony. I think they've been excellent all season. I think the only thing that has let them down has been, I can remember, you know, the Liverpool teams who used to batter everybody at Anfield. They created about 15 chances a game, and Liverpool now are getting to that stage. They're incredibly creative, and now that they have the reincarnation of Toshak and Keegan up front, I think they'll just get better and better. I find them, yes, very exciting. The only reason that I wouldn't tip them for a Champions, I wouldn't necessarily tip them for a Champions League place, is that I'm sure we'll come on to the subject of Tottenham, because Tottenham are just as good, if not better.
Yeah, we probably won't talk about Tottenham on this programme.
Paddy, I think Toshak's going to sue you, and Suarez is going to sue you for that comparison.
Well, I remember the effect that Keegan had on Liverpool. I'm unlike you, Tony. I'm old enough to remember. Toshak's going to sue. Well, Toshak probably looked after his body a bit better within the context of the time.
Peter, let's talk some West Brom. I mean, it's been a decent start to the season. I thought in terms of the way they played. What's a realistic expectation this year, and what's the plan? Because if you remember when Robbie D left, people were talking about this guy, and I'm sure you remind me what his name is. Some young coach that they have there, who they all love, and they think is going to be, you know, is going to be ready for a managerial job in a year or two, and you know, they pride themselves on being a very well run club. Is the plan to, you know, hang out with Hodgson, get to mid-table, and then let Hodgson retire or go away?
I think that sounds a plausible plan. Yeah, Michael Appleton, there was a little discussion around at the Hawthorns at the end of last season. I was talking to one of the coaching staff, and there wasn't a certainty that Hodgson was going to keep Appleton, Downing and Kiely as his backroom staff. But they hammered it all out. They've gone with that. And when you talk to Hodgson about his future, I mean, when they won a couple of games, everyone's saying, oh, do you want a new contract? Do you want a new contract at the end of this year? He's very much, you know, let's wait and see, not because of any vanity or any great ambition of other things. It's just that might be a natural break at the end of this season. And then whether Michael Appleton is the man, well, he's so highly rated, he's, you know, he's so well groomed with his Manchester United upbringing and everything, that it would be exciting to see that progression and see it work. But I think the ambitions for this season, I'm afraid, aren't any more than mid-table. I think they've got a bit of a problem with their big purchase, and that is Shane Long, who has been excellent. I don't see him and Peter Odemwingie as a perfect partnership, and yet Odemwingie went and scored 15 Premier League goals last year. Hasn't been the same so far, and I think that's partly because Long is the man in possession. If he goes and plays, where do you play Odemwingie? If you play the two of them up front, they both want to go long. Who's going to come short to keep Albion's passing game going? So I think that's a bit of a dilemma, and might become a dilemma in the transfer window as well.
So why did he buy Shane Long? I mean, I honestly, I have to say, I know he's played well this year, but I thought, you know, Odemwingie, he's there, he's happy, he scores goals. You've got a great bunch of players in terms of skillful guys like Morrison, and you know, Dorans in midfield who can release him into space.
Exactly.
Why not build around him? Why do you have to go and sign somebody like Shane Long? I mean, what's the point?
Okay, I think given
for all that money too.
A lot of money, that's right, and real quality, you know, and perhaps it stops West Brom's rivals around the area of the table buying him. But I think if Roy Hodgson had been able to bring in, for example, Danny Graham, who he thought he'd got, then he could have played him up top and Odemwingie, like we were talking about Van Persie earlier, sprinting off him and playing off him. But when he was in fairly big money for a striker and couldn't get Danny Graham, it was on to plan B. And you're told, do you want Shane Long? He's quality. He is Premier League quality. He'll get you goal. Do you want him? I think it was difficult to say no once he hadn't got Danny Graham.
Final point on this. We're going to go back to Liverpool very quickly because obviously there's news that Steven Gerrard has an ankle infection, which sounds kind of bizarre to me. But
yes,
Tony, what do you make of this? Because, you know, a lot of us said, okay, so the key will be when we see, you know, when we can judge Kenny, how he's integrated Gerrard into the side. Now we won't know for a while longer. I mean, how big a part is he going to play the rest of the season?
Well, I don't think he'll play that big a part. I mean, I don't think it's come as a surprise to anyone that he's struggling so badly with injuries, given what his body's been through over the years. And I think this is the reality we have to just face, and that, you know, from now on, that he's likely to be a bit better player. He's not going to be the man who single-handedly drags them from the brink, you know. That's football. You move forward, and you know, it looks as if the two centre halves plays well without Carragher. And Carragher's been creaking really badly. You know, it's very similar to Jan Terry, really. You know, over the last few months. And so, you know, the way forward is without these two fellas who've been the talisman of the last 10 years. And I think Kenny's known that right from the start. And you know, perhaps in a better run club, sort of 14, 15 months ago, when Real Madrid came knocking for Steven Gerrard for 20 million, they might have sold him. Given his age and given his situation.
Tony, I was saying that, and I was getting death threats, you know, over Twitter. The problem is it would have been politically impossible. I completely agree with you that Stephen should have been sold, as indeed Torres was at the right time. But you know, it would have been politically poisonous.
Yeah, and I'm glad he didn't. You know, I'm made up. He's still there, and he'll see out the end of his career. And you know, I'm rather hoping that he finally wins a title, winners medal, the same way Brian Robson did.
Absolutely.
As a bit per player.
It would be like that, wouldn't it? Yeah.
But you know, it would be a fitting end to his career.
Absolutely.
And I'm glad he's still wearing a Liverpool bib. But you know, it's you could see the problems mounting. You know, sort of the beginning of summer last year, and I think we've just got to face the facts that this is where we are with them, and I think a lot of Dalglish's buys during the summer were informed by the fact that he knows that he's not going to have the captain rounds on a permanent basis.
Now, in our live show at the weekend, and Patty, you and Tony were a part of it together with Cascarino and Allison. I thought Tony made a very good point. He talked about how when we discuss sort of pros and cons of the Premier League, and it is their 20th anniversary in February, he said one of the good things was that the financial power has moved away from the boardroom and into the dressing room, in the sense that the people raking in the big clubs, if in the past you might have had chairmen who were, oh, I don't know, asset stripping and taking money out of clubs. Now, you know, a lot of the profits are going to the people who are actually pretty much producing them, and those are the players. Tony, in light of that, I'm wondering, do you think, I mean, from the players' perspective, they're obviously all earning a lot more money now. Could they be doing more? Should they be doing more? And perhaps via their union, the PFA, to have a bigger say in the running of the game?
Yeah, well, I think they should be. I mean, I think one of the things that the union has never done is harness the power of the players. And I mean, I think there were a couple of occasions when Gordon Taylor had the opportunity to step up and take a bigger role in the running of the sport, and you know, in this country, and failed to do so. So yeah, it has been disappointing. I mean, I think it would need a different type of leader there to the PFA, and perhaps sort of widening the remit so you don't only have X players in. But you know, I do think, yeah, they should be looking to have a bigger say and looking to sit down at the table with the Premier League and with the FA and say, well, no, come on, you know, you're not making all the rules. This is our input.
For better or worse, whatever their leadership is, I mean, I think the question is, could they be doing more? Should they be doing more? Peter, if Matt Dickinson were here, I would be asking him about Gary Neville, because he kind of sounds to me as an obvious candidate if this is something he wants to do. He's got a wider vision of the world. He comes from a football family. His dad was a football administrator. I think even people who hate him, and there are many because he has said some pretty stupid things in his life, but he's also said a lot of intelligent things. I think a lot of people would agree that he might be the kind of person who could do that and could go forward. Hey, yeah. What do you make of Gary Neville? And also, what do you think a players' union could and should ask for that they haven't yet?
I think it's a very good idea in Gary Neville. He does have some, you know, quite a lot of intelligence, you can tell. He's very opinionated, very forthright, and willing to take a lead on things. How many Premier League footballers are involved in the PFA? I can't find any. You know, Clark Carlisle, we know of, a very good spokesman, good role model and everything. The people in this game, in football, who have the big noise, who have the big platform, are the Premier League, you know, clubs, players, managers. You would get a lot more, you'd get heard a lot more if you had Premier League representation there from people who had the good of the game at heart. And I think if Gary Neville could be approached and take a higher role, I think that would help. That would help lead it in that direction. You've got to have high enough profile people who care about the game enough, and I don't think we've got that, I'm afraid, with the PFA.
With respect, Peter, I think that Gary Neville is a perfect example of why there is only one Gordon Taylor. Gary Neville, less than a decade ago, was involved in trying to lead a strike of England players in defence of the indefensible, i.e. Rio Ferdinand, after he had missed a drug test. Now, that was an incredibly stupid thing to do, because if he'd succeeded in persuading the FA, England would have been thrown out of international competition. He was young when he did that. However, recently, only a couple of months ago, he published an autobiography in which there was no element of self-recognition of what he'd done. No element of apology, no element of, ooh, I really wish I hadn't done that because it was really stupid. Therefore, to have someone who's as incapable of seeing the wider picture as that in charge of the administration of football would be utter madness.
Tony, I want to get you in on this on some of the points that perhaps a players' union might want to ask for. And I was thinking about this the other day, and one very obvious thing to me, and I don't understand why certainly Premier League footballers don't do this, is why is it that when they get hurt, they all go to the club doctor, they take advice from the club doctor, and so on, and so few of them go to see independent specialists? It strikes me as a complete no-brainer that if I'm a professional athlete and my livelihood is my body, obviously the club doctor has a very obvious conflict of interest there. That strikes me as one of the first things. I mean, is that something that a players' union should do?
Well, yeah, I mean, that certainly is something that they should be doing. I mean, you know, we you know, the old Shankly line, you know, it's not your knee, that's Liverpool's knee. It's obviously not great for players. I mean, the clubs will chew up and spit out players, you know, as and when. The reality is a lot of people actually do that. I mean, I know that sort of French players at Arsenal were... we're going back to France and seeing doctors there and getting treated there.
Every time it seems like you have to have the club's permission. I mean, I would, if, but just say, if I was Gordon Taylor, maybe he hasn't thought of this. I would negotiate with the league to say, listen, you know, any type of a player has a right to see their own doctor. Here's a list of independent doctors entirely unaffiliated to the club, and then you go and you make a decision together on the treatment.
Yeah, that makes sense, because certainly the interests of a club are to get the player back on the pitch as soon as possible, without regard to the long term effects. And you know, we all know that when players are injured, it's almost like they don't exist at clubs. You know, it's the one thing managers hate. So yeah, I mean that's something that I think they should be doing. I mean, I am an admirer of Gordon Taylor. Like Paddy, you know, I think he's got brilliant qualities. I just think there were times over the last 20 years when it called for a little bit more dynamism than Gordon Taylor's got, and I think they've let opportunities slip by. And I think someone like Richard Scudamore would never let an opportunity like that pass.
Well, Peter, I think that's a good point. I mean, I think I'm going to go out on a limb here, but I think most of us here agree that, for example, the way the Liverpool and Manchester United takeovers happened, those types of leverage buyouts are distinctly bad for football. The Premier League couldn't stand in the way. Scudamore couldn't or didn't want to stand in their way. But it strikes me that that's one area where maybe a union could step in there and try to prevail upon the Premier League to also go beyond the remit of just the players, but also put certain safeguards like that in place about how a football club is purchased, by whom. I mean, should they be the 21st owner of the Premier League?
Well, I think that's one of the things which I was talking about, the whole idea of the football clubs being as part of the national heritage, of being more than just a money-making business, of being something that's important to a community, is something that's been, you know, important to a region, to people, and this is something that the players, you know, could get involved in and lobby to the union, could lobby to safeguard. The fact is, though, most of the players really don't give a toss. You know, they're getting the money, they're living the millionaire lifestyle, and it'd be hard to see them rising up like a Red Army and mounting the barricades and bringing football fans the game they want.
That's right, and that's why Gordon Taylor came out of another era, when perhaps players did care a lot more about their game, because they were part of it. They were part, you know, where was he? Blackburn and everywhere. Gordon Taylor, he cared about his region, didn't he? Whereas now, let's face it, they're passing through, and whether it's here or Spain or Italy, you know, they've got 10 years where a lot of these guys can earn $70,000 a week. So what does the importance of the game or the community matter to them?
Time now for some quick hits. I'm sure it's just a coincidence, Paddy, but in the week that Gareth Bale poses in a Great Britain Olympic Team T-shirt, Great Britain Olympic Team, of course, being the team you've been championing for many, many years, he also goes and scores two great goals as Spurs dismantle QPR 3-1. Is this his natural level? Is this the level of performance we should be expecting of him every week? Or would that just make him superhuman?
I think he looks superhuman when he's on that form. He's not a self-starting player. I don't know what the phrase phrase I'm trying to look for. He's not a man who can design a performance, but when the team's playing well, as Spurs did yesterday, he is magnificent, unstoppable, and a joy to watch. I really am so excited about this Spurs team, and I think the race for sort of third and fourth place is going to be absolutely terrific this season. And Bale might even make the difference.
I'm just going to say one thing about that. As watching on television, I hear the commentators talk about how Scott Parker is an unsung hero. Scott Parker, that would be the Football Writers Player of the Year last season. But the funniest thing is they were saying it just as the Tottenham fans were all singing his name. Blackburn and Norwich draw 3-3, but Rovers are furious after Norwich's equaliser came via an extremely dubious penalty. Peter, was that the worst officiating decision this year? And also, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much sympathy do you have for Steve Keane?
Okay, well, actually, I thought that was a penalty. I'll probably stand alone on this committee with that one. But when Steven Nzonzi came down from the air, claiming he had been fouled between two players, where did he think the ball was? Why was he sticking his hands up in the air? Get on with the game. Otherwise, risk the possibility that you might be handling the ball and giving away a penalty.
Tony, Sunderland and Villa draw 2-2, and Taylor two strikers. Darren Bent getting probably rightfully abused by the home crowd, rightfully from a fan's perspective. And Connor Wickham making his, I believe that was one of his first starts for Sunderland, and scoring a very nice goal. What's the bigger story?
Well, I think Wickham's emergence will eventually be the biggest story. I mean, I think Liverpool took a good look at him during the summer and decided he wasn't quite ready. Sunderland took a chance and paid a bit more money than perhaps you might have thought for a kid that age. But he's certainly got potential, and I think he's going to turn into a good player.
Gab, one for you now. Juventus are top of Serie A after a victory at lowly, yes, lowly Inter. But Juventus, are they really back to the big time?
Well, I mean, the downside is that obviously they're not in Europe this year, and that they still have certain flaws in the way they play. And they made losses in excess of £80 million last season. But that was because they didn't qualify for the Champions League in the first place. There's a real buzz there. They've got a new stadium, which will be named soon. But I think when you build a new stadium and it gets a silly corporate name, I think it's a little bit less painful for the fan because it's a new place anyway. And Antonio Conte has been absolutely fantastic. They're playing with wonderful intensity. And they're also showing that Andrea Pirlo isn't finished. Far from it. Thanks for joining us this week. And remember, you can always go to www.thetimes.co.uk. You'll find your news, your gossip, your analysis. You can download the live podcast that we did last week. And of course, you can always follow us on Twitter. Most of us are up there. There's also our web chats. Patty's web chat, of course, is on Mondays. Mine is on Tuesday. We got Ollie K on Wednesdays. And of course, we also have Graham Spears as well, those who like to have a dip north of the border. We know you have options out there, and we appreciate you listening. Till next time, bye-bye.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.